And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shout Out.
He's Mr. Andy Shilton and I'm Steph Barnett. And today on the show, beautiful thing.
Oh, thank you, Steph. No, she means the film based on the show, based on the film, based on the show, something like that. We got cast and choir in today.
Yes, we have. And Heritage and History from former MP Stephen Williams be here in the studio.
Plus brand new My Five from AS Police.
All coming today.
Right here on Shout Out. Hello, Terry.
Hello.
So, hello, Steffi.
Good afternoon.
I just realised we haven't solved our flickery light problem yet.
I thought it was you flashing.
Well, thank you.
You're red and flashing.
It's nice of you to call me a beautiful thing, too.
Really?
Are you changing your mind, though? Are you going to start being nice to me or something?
Not. No, no, no.
No, no. Oh, well. Sorry, audience.
Not this side of midnight.
So, we're talking beautiful thing. I loved that film.
Yeah. To be honest, I actually watched it earlier this afternoon to refresh my memory, and I cried at the same bit.
Yeah. So it was such an iconic movie, and I still remember so many lines from it, half of which you can't actually repeat on air, I hasten to add.
No, you can. You can't say ass on the air, but you can say arse. You've got to say it posh.
Arse.
That's right. English.
Yeah, that's right.
A great big pink neon arse.
Yes.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Ofcom allow that.
It was a classic bit. It's like one of my favourite bits of the movie is when Leah gets back and she's like absolutely blind drunk and they're like, Leah, you were right. And she's like, Leah? It was Leah.
She's already changed. She was Mama Cass.
Yeah, but I mean, we were talking about it earlier because it was so iconic. I mean, it was 1996. I came out at the age of 18, and one of the first things that some of my friends did when I was like new to being gay, but you know what I mean. When you just come out, they were like, "You've got to watch this film."
You get a membership card.
Another jingle, isn't it?
Welcome to being gay. Here's your membership card.
Yeah. And your beautiful thing.
Copy of Beautiful Thing, Suzanne Vega record, and membership card signed by Peter Tatchell.
Don't forget your peppermint foot lotion as well. It's got to be in there somewhere, hasn't it? You know?
No, it's a wonderful film. Do you know, I first saw it at a rundown ex-porn cinema in Birmingham near the gay village.
We won't ask what you were doing there.
Well, no, it was watching Beautiful Thing, actually. That was the main billing. At the end of it, the audience stood up and applauded, which I've never seen before or since at any cinema, because I think it meant so much to so many people there.
Channel 4 did some really good stuff in the 90s, didn't they?
They were the radical station. Everyone forgets that. They were the really groundbreaking
network. Well, they gave us Queer as Folk.
They did.
Well, But, I mean, after all these years, I didn't know it was originally a play, and then they made the film.
It was, yeah. It was made in about 1993, 94, by Jonathan Harvey, who wrote Gimme 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 for BBC Two later on in his
Number
career,
69 yeah. Paradise Passage, as I recall.
That's right, and it's wonderful, and I'd recommend anyone who isn't familiar with the story to go and see it when it shows in Bristol.
It's interesting because you go back to like 93 and even 96 when I came out, it still wasn't okay to be gay.
It's a very different landscape.
And the film, and I'm assuming very much the play as well, portrays it, you know, as a kind of being accepted, and it's quite a bold statement, especially at the end, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a happy film, and there was a period in the 1980s, when many gay storylines always ended in tragedy. That was just the sort of trope at the time.
Jonathan Harvey, the kind of HIV/AIDS.
There's also that tradition. You know, you couldn't have a gay or a trans character that was happy and settled. Mm. But Beautiful Thing sort of broke the mold in sort of popular culture. So I think
it ended
very
really well. Yeah. That dance, smooch, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At the end in the square.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the age of 18, I fancied the pair of them. They were just.
Of course you did.
You know.
Steve was very good looking in 1996 when I watched it.
He went on, he was in
he
the
was
bill.
He was in the bill, yeah. And he was in EastEnders a couple of times.
Indeed, where Linda Henry is, who did a fantastic job. As the mother.
Yes, I don't know what her actual name is, but the girl that played Leah, obviously, is one
Tamika,
of the characters.
Isn't it?
She's
Tamika
in EastEnders.
Empson.
Yeah.
Yeah. and yeah. she is also in EastEnders.
So, yeah. But you watch them in EastEnders, you kind of want them to burst back out into Leia. Who's Leia? You know, or hang that big pink neon sign on top of the Vic. That would be quite cool, wouldn't
that
it?
That would be.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to move on a little bit. This week's My Five comes courtesy of some people we had on the show quite recently, actually, didn't we?
We did. So we've got Mike and Helen from Avon Somerset Police are going to be doing a My Five podcast monthly. So it'll be the second Thursday of the month. This is their first introductory one, which is a My Seven and a bit.
Yeah, it's still Terry tops it with his My 10 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, Terry's had to go into a lane. So, he was wearing duct tape and he still went on.
So anyway, let's have a listen.
My 5 on Shout Out.
Welcome to the podcast for AS Police
with Helen and Mike. Avon and Somerset's LGBT team works for its officers and staff and equally for the community. Between the team of us, of which Helen and I head, I take the role of the more tactical approach. So things like our website, our own internal team meetings and taskings and things like that, delivering towards community needs, very much trying to listen to what the community wants from us and what support they require, whilst Helen takes a more strategic role, and Helen's going to take you through what she does.
I represent Avon and Somerset Police LGBT officers in our regional format with our colleagues from Wiltshire, Gloucestershire, Dorset and Devon and Cornwall, and I also attend our national meetings for the National LGBT Plus Network, so we're linked into a whole group of colleagues from all forces around the UK, as well as those that don't have geographical responsibilities, such as our Ministry of Defence Police, as well as agencies such as the National Crime Agency, who deal with serious and organised crime. So we have the national perspective there, and also that links through to the European LGBT Association, where we get to work closely with our colleagues and indeed help a lot of our colleagues from countries where LGBT rights within policing are certainly not as well developed as we'd like them to be. Mike, could you explain some of the more specialist work that you're involved in leading for the constabulary?
Yeah, the main role I do, as I'm sure some of the listeners will be aware of, is that initially I started out just 4 years ago now, looking at how we can improve services for male survivors of rape, sexual assault, which is now sort of segued into domestic abuse and violence. And of course, this also, again, segues into the LGBT community, where we are aware that domestic abuse and violence, sexual abuse and violence does take place in LGBT relationships, but as with all LGBT crime, it is vastly underreported. So it is right that I have brought that programme into the LGBT team from a policing perspective, but also tried to raise awareness within the LGBT community of the work that is being done around that. And that's not to say that men are more important than women or within the LGBT community or indeed trans, but men are underrepresented in the services that are available to them, whether gay or straight, and likewise with trans, where I'm desperately trying to build up confidence within that community that, you know, they will be listened to and they will be believed. They're not going to be judged based on a lifestyle. That is not what we're doing. I do fully accept that some people within the LGBT community as a whole will still hold these beliefs because of things that have gone on in the past, and I fully understand that. But I would absolutely implore anybody who is the victim of any crime from the LGBT community to report it to the police.
And I think the important thing as well is, as well as providing that response to victims and survivors, we are trying to push and we're trying to lead for improvements in support agencies. We can't do this on our own in the police, so we need the health service to be alive to it. We need support agencies to all come on board and understand that the services they provide need to be representative for everybody. So a lot of the work that we do when Mike talks about strategic work is around looking at those policies and is around making sure that we bring our partners along with us. We really want to make those changes that are going to benefit people.
I think that is been achieved in so much as with the network supporting male survivors. That's exactly what I've managed to do there. And in some ways it'd be great to replicate that with the LGBT work, and I think in some ways we have started to do that, particularly with Brigstow, BDP and THT.
I think, yes, definitely. I'm so pleased that the organisations that are supporting people with HIV have got the confidence to come to us. You know, we have made some really quite dreadful mistakes in the recent past, and we're really trying to work to make sure that those things don't happen. And I'm very pleased that support agencies such as THD and Brigstow have the confidence to come to us now and know that they will be listened to, and that we will look at their concerns and that we will do something about it. I've taken on the lead for HIV within the force, not because I believe that it's inherently linked to LGBT, but I think that there's a better awareness amongst the LGBT population of HIV, and we need to bring that knowledge and that expertise and understanding to the wider community within our own police colleagues, because there's so much misinformation around and a concern that just needn't be there. And one thing I would stress is that we really welcome the input of people from the community. We have volunteer positions within our team, and we always welcome people who wish to join. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you think, I've got some skills, I've got some expertise, perhaps I'm really good at social media, perhaps I'm really good at digital work, we'd love you to come and help us. And that goes for all our roles as well, whether it's being a special constable, whether it's being a forensics officer, the comms operator. There's so many opportunities where we would, you know, really encourage people to come forward because we know the skills are out there. So, Mike, if people need to contact the police for help and they want to specifically speak to an LGBT colleague, how do they go about that?
Okay, well, obviously, the first thing I would say on that is if it is a non-emergency, then if I could ask, obviously, people to call 101. Also, if you didn't want to call on 101, you can fill out our online reporting process. But again, please be mindful, if you are in personal immediate danger or the crime is in progress, you should always call 999.
How about if somebody just wants to get in touch with us because they'd like us to speak at an event, Mike?
Okay, then again, you can do that via the online form, or you can email us, lgbtliaison@avonandsomerset.police.uk.
And how about our other social media?
We are also on Twitter. There you can find us at ASPoliceLGBT.
If you have a story you could tell in 5 minutes, get in contact. Visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
I was waiting for you to catwall along.
No, I just stopped. I've seen your fingers going for a slider.
Everyone in the room was singing that there. That's really
they were.
Cool.
Everyone was bopping. I think at some point everyone's bum was lifted off a chair.
Bless. I'm sure it doesn't really need an introduction, that one, does it? But that's a raise and a little respect.
Wow, never knew that.
No.
Well, some people may
know. I didn't know. You know what respect is. You know, that's more than a point. Anyway.
Ooh. I'm counting.
I know. I'm your beautiful thing. It's fine. I could do with that this week.
Okay.
So, anyway, welcome back to Shout Out to a good friend of the show. We've had you on several times, haven't we? And we were trying to work out when you were last on. We think it was when we were doing the mayoral hustings, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. Back in April, May 2017.
Yeah. So, long time ago. We should actually introduce you. A very warm welcome to it, Stephen Williams. And we used to say MP Stephen Williams. Of course, you're not these days,
no,
are you?
I'm time I has been, yes.
I didn't mean lots of things.
Stephen, what's FBPE, the hashtag?
Oh, that's on my Twitter name. That means follow back because I'm pro-European.
Ah.
But let's not talk about Brexit.
No, but at least everyone knows what the hashtag is now.
Yeah.
I hadn't actually spotted that, but yeah, that's good. So is that used by lots of people then, that?
It is. It's a way of sort of signalling that you're pro-European and people should retweet what you say. So.
Yeah. So now, give us some kind of background of what you're coming to talk to us about, because it's quite a broad, when you say heritage and LGBT history, it's quite a huge, big subject, isn't it?
But you've got a blog, haven't you?
Which has got lots of articles, obviously, about politics, but also a lot of articles about history and culture as well, because those are my sort of three main interests. I'm a history graduate of Bristol University, so most of my reading for pleasure is historical biographies, and I like visiting sort of historic places, houses, castles, and so on. I've done that since I was a child, so it's my longest personal interest.
It's a national thing, then, the heritage thing. It's not just around the Bristol area or South West.
I'm interested in visiting sort of heritage sites all over the world. I've never been a sort of beach holiday person. I go to visit art galleries and houses and great architecture and townscapes and so on. Obviously, when I was a politician, though, and I was involved in changing the law on whether it was homophobic bullying or same-sex marriage, which I was the Lib Dem lead on back in 2013, I used to say when I spoke at events, we'll get the law right one day, and in most areas it's right now.
Gradually,
some more work to do on transsexual issues, obviously. But for gay men and lesbians, the law in Britain is now probably one of the best sort of legal frameworks in the world. But that's only the starting point. What really matters is how society sees us.
Hmm.
And I say us because what you didn't say in the introduction, of course, as well as being a former MP, I was Bristol's so far only, in fact, openly gay MP and the Liberals' first openly gay MP as well. So I used to talk about these issues a lot.
But well, I thought I'd let you out yourself on it rather than me do it for you.
I often say this to people. Outing is never a one-off event. It's, it's a continuous process right throughout life. But I always used to say that once the law is right, that's only really the starting point. Mm. It ought to be a given, really. The law sort of enables you to be who you are. What matters is how we're known and how we're depicted. And that comes to sort of contemporary stuff. How are we shown on TV, in soap operas or films? And you can talk about Beautiful Thing shortly. But also how our past is recognised as well, as someone who's primarily interested in history. Of course, there are lots of gay people involved in life at the moment that have been in the past as well. Mm. But it was probably the same for you when you were in school. I bet none of your teachers ever told you that James I, the king who was involved in the gunpowder plot, the reason we have fireworks and bonfire night, was very obviously and clearly a homosexual. Yeah. And had male lovers who he had at his court and who he preferred with riches and privileges, and everyone knew that at the time.
Also know from some of the history shows that we did with Ella that William Shakespeare was bisexual and had a boyfriend. He wrote loads and loads of letters to.
Yeah, and I think quite a lot of his sonnets are thought to be sort of love messages to men. Although, of course, a lot of these things can't be proven, and that's a big problem with the history of gay people.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. It's because of the way society has been over the years, we're very good at, when we find that, we delete it a bit, because at the time, it's, can't talk about homosexuality, that's a sin, that's wrong, that's, against the law, etc. So the bit of it that is LGBT plus gets kind of swept away under the carpet to hide it, to make the history look the way it's felt to be that kind of time.
I think history has been sanitised over the years, the Victorians in particular, and an awful lot of what children are taught in school is still based really on a curriculum and books that were written in Victorian times, when of course the law was changed to be very oppressive indeed towards gay men, not towards lesbians, but towards gay men. So generations of people were never told about famous homosexuals in history, and more recent people as well. World War II is probably the most understood and most taught part of our national story, but very few people until very recently would have been told at all about Alan Turing and the cracking of the German Enigma code.
That, well, part of that was also because it was top secret.
Absolutely. But even when that secrecy went away, I think in the 1980s, Turing's role in that wasn't really recognised. And then when it was recognised, the reason that, probable reason why he committed suicide in 1954, because he'd been prosecuted under the law at the time for gross indecency, led probably to his suicide. Mm. You know, Turing should be an absolute national hero that everyone has heard of, but he's still a relatively obscure person.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's. I mean, certainly in the circles. I mean, and of course, the film shot him a lot more to be well known. So it actually isn't known for definite that he did commit suicide. Just as a
well, there's lots of conspiracy theories about all sorts of things. if you rely on the internet for your history, then you'll come across things like that. But the inquest found that he had committed suicide through cyanide poisoning, and he had, you know, good reason to be in despair at that time of his career being ruined and him being prosecuted, and of course going through terrible treatment at the time of being effectively poisoned and chemically castrated as a way that society felt in the mid-1950s was the way to deal with gay men who'd been convicted under the law at the time.
So on your search, have you come across other examples of where you've looked at something in history, and when you've dug a bit more, you've found a bit that's been covered up that is LGBT plus, perhaps?
Well, it's the case in a lot of instances that historic sites, for instance, that have had, and it is usually gay men. It is very hard to discover sort of significant lesbians in historic places in the past. I tried very hard when I was putting this article together to be as inclusive as I could, but inevitably it is mainly men who own the properties and the castles and the houses and so on, and largely feature in history, who we know a bit more about. But even now, a lot of places that people might visit that may have been owned in the past by a man who was known at the time to be gay is still not recognised in the guidebooks or in the exhibition that you go into after buying your ticket. And this started to change last year. I mean, the BBC, for instance, did a fantastic series of programmes to mark the 50th anniversary of the ceasing of prosecutions for gay men in private over the age of 21 in 1967. And one of them, which I've bought recently on DVD and watched again, was called Against the Law, which was based on the prosecution of Lord Montague, who would be known to lots of people because he's founded the National Motor Museum at Bewley. And I'd visited Bewley a long time ago. I'd met Lord Montague because he was a member of the House of Lords, and we used to go to art shows together. Not actually together, but as part of the same group. But I never knew this part of his story, that he was prosecuted in 1954 as well. And that's what led to the Wolferton report that eventually led to the partial decriminalisation. But at Bewley, of course, people go there for the cars and the arts and the park and are completely unaware of that personal aspect of the most recent owner of that property. And that got
me thinking. Is it recognised anywhere now on the property?
I've not been back to Bewley to test that. I've been slowly doing this over the last year or so, sort of looking at guidebooks and websites and so on to see whether places are becoming more up to date. But I think a lot of places have a lot of ground to make up. The National Trust is now making a big effort to recognise sort of gay former owners of their properties. But you may remember last year when the National Trust started to highlight this, their volunteers refused, for instance, to wear rainbow badges to commemorate this.
Yeah, of course, I've got a few friends who worked for
quite, quite a bit of an internal problem.
Yeah, but it was. Which is a bit of a shame. So, listen, history is one of those things we could talk about forever. We are rapidly running out of time, though. But
have you done anything in France?
No, I've stuck to it. I've stuck to it. Okay. Well. I just mentioned two places in Bristol, though. The significant people that people might not have known about, and one of them is very significant. First of all, Henbury Churchyard. Henbury Church is right behind Blaise Castle, so everyone will know where it is. There is a grave in there, which is an obelisk, a sort of an Egyptian obelisk, and it commemorates Amelia Edwards, who was the Michael Palin, Joanna Lumley of Victorian times, a travel writer, massively famous at the time. What was not known about her was that she was a lesbian, and she had a lifelong partnership with her female lover, and they're actually buried together in Henbury, which is probably a world first, that they are buried together with her partner Ellen Braisler out at Henbury Churchyard. So
there's also a couple of slave boys, isn't there?
People know about those, and you'll find in lots of books about Bristol's history more recently where we've acknowledged slavery. That the graves of Scipio Africanus, who you're referring to, is mentioned. But Amelia Edwards isn't, and why the grave is significant. And the other famous place that people will know is Clifton Hill House, now University Hall of Residence, a Palladian villa in Clifton, where somebody called John Addington Symonds lived, who is a Victorian writer. And he wrote a book called The Problem with Male Love in Greek Society. And he was probably the first person to use the word homosexual, and that was in 1873. So the word homosexual was written, literally, and invented in Bristol by a Bristol man. And there is a plaque on the wall of Clifton Hill House recognising that John Addington Symonds lived there. But he's acknowledged as a writer, and not why now he deserves to be famous. And he was gay himself, but of course he lived a secretive life, because it would have been very difficult to be openly gay in
Right, I was going to say, it sounds like it's one we could do. We're getting you back to talk
happily
about.
Come back. There's lots more
particular
examples. Barclay Castle, for instance, where Edward II was murdered. But if people want to read more, then just Google Stephen Williams' blog, LGBT or something, and they'll find it. And there's a lot of historical sites, both in Bristol and the West Country and further afield, for people to visit and to see them in a new light.
Cool. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll also make sure that we link to your blog on our website as well, so it's up there with the podcast. But listen, it's lovely to catch up with you, and it's a fascinating story. I love history, full stop. When we have Ella doing it, it's really good fun as well, isn't it? So, but thank you so much for coming in to talk about it. And what we'll have to do is get you back on again and perhaps talk about it in a bit more detail. So, anyway, you're listening to Shout Out. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute when Terry's got the news.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Do you know, Terry, you could have been a bit quieter with your motorbike in that interview. We heard you go past in the background there. So that's Colour of the World by Sash, who sadly, it was this year, he passed away earlier this year, wasn't it? I'm sure it was.
Time goes so quick.
Yeah, no, it was, I'm sure. Yeah. So. Anyway, Terry, are you ready for us with some news?
Whenever you like.
Cool.
This is Shoutout News on Thursday the 13th of September. Now, we always like to hear about gay-friendly congregations who give the lie to the claim by Christian fundamentalists that their religion condemns nonconformists, gender, sexual or cultural. Hillhurst United Church in Calgary is part of the United Church of Canada, a welcoming denomination preaching God's love for all humans. To help celebrate Pride Week, the church began to fly a variation on the traditional rainbow flag, which incorporates a chevron with black and brown stripes to represent people of colour and the traditional trans colours of powder blue, pale pink and white between them. This variation was designed by David Quasar in response to the Black Lives Matter initiative, and the design has been endlessly debated on LGBT websites. The Hillhurst Church says that they have received many positive comments about flying the Quasar Pride flag and say that they will keep it on the flagpole through the year. How the Once Mighty Have Fallen was the title of one gay blogger's post this week about Linda Bellos, once one of the champions of the feminist and gay movements, who has now been interviewed by the police under caution after several outbursts in which she told an audience how she wanted to thump transgender women. Bellos in the 1980s was a Labour Party activist on the Marxist feminist wing of the party, and her achievements for cisgender gay men and lesbians are quite considerable. She led one of the so-called loony left London borough councils, who championed black and gay rights at a time when the majority of public opinion was very homophobic. Although a prominent voice in black feminism, Bellos also was not afraid to take on homophobia in communities close to her, and she helped organise a boycott of the African British paper The Voice after it ran extremely homophobic articles in 1991. However, this has been eclipsed by more recent articles and statements made by Miss Bellos, which align themselves with a type of radical feminism which dismisses transgender people, and particularly transgender women. These reached fever pitch with the remarks that Bellos wanted to attack trans women. Although the police did not decide to bring any charges after interviewing Ms. Bellos, the activist now faces a private prosecution brought by a trans campaigner. Michael Stipe has a new book of art photography out called simply Volume 1. Stipe was the frontman for a band called REM, who started out in the early 80s on the US alternative music circuit. from their fan base on American college radio stations, they built up a cult international following, which exploded in the early 90s to propel them to chart stardom. The band finished touring 6 years ago and called it a day. Stipe was always an enigmatic figure, evading questions about his sexuality, but he always supported LGBT and HIV causes, and came out as queer in 2001. He elaborated on his identity in a 2004 issue of the Dutch gay men's magazine, But. Talking to BBC Two's Newsnight programme, Stipe said that he was delighted that a younger generation of people define themselves in much more non-binary terms than either gay or straight, and noted that he also supported transgender liberation. And finally, the September issue of the community newspaper, the Chew Valley Gazette, reports that Dr. Phil Hammond, who was until recently the presenter of Saturday mornings on BBC Radio Bristol, is to stand against North Somerset MP Jacob Rees-Mogg at the next general election. Although the country will probably not go to the polls until 2022, Dr. Hammond said that he wanted to be upfront about his intention to stand for the Health Action Party. And he says that he wants to raise issues of NHS funding and express concern about the way in which Mr. Rees-Mogg has been taking British politics. Mr. Hammond is no newcomer to politics. He kick-started his career in 1992 for the Struck Off and Die Junior Doctors Alliance, raising issues of hours worked by NHS staff. Dr. Hammond is known to be gay-friendly, and his candidacy is of interest to LGBT politics followers because of Mr. Rees-Mogg's declared opposition to birth control and homosexuality. Although we should note that Mr. Rees-Mogg has also made more conciliatory noises. He told the BBC that if invited to a gay colleague's wedding, he should probably have a wonderful time there. For these news stories and more, you can check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt. And for Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
There you go, Mama Cass, or Cass Elliot, as she's also known. And make your own kind of music.
Oh, how dare you speak over the top of
Mama?
Oh, I'm
so sorry.
Shock horror.
So I love that song, though. So, and we played the newer version recently as well, didn't we?
Well,
you weren't so much of a fan.
I'm a 60s girl, so that's got to be.
Yeah. Well, I've got another one for you later. I've got the Mamas and the Papas with Dream a Little Dream of Me.
Also a good one.
Yeah. So it seemed kind of fitting considering what we're about to talk about, which is just,
it is.
It's just like, I was so pleased when I saw this come up on the schedule of what we're going to talk about. But I tell you what, rather me introduce yourself, because I might get it wrong like I just did off air. Should we go this way? Do you want to introduce yourself and what you do?
Yes, hello. My name is Ailey. I am a producer at Tobacco Factory Theatres, and I'm here because I've been leading a wonderful community choir who you're going to hear about more about in a minute.
Hello, I am Marta, and I am part of the choir, and the community choir in The Beautiful Thing.
And I'm Richard, and I'm also part of the community choir.
Cool. Now, we're obviously, because we totally spoil it, top of show, by talking about the film for ages, but we're obviously going to be talking about Beautiful Thing, and you're doing the stage show, aren't you?
Yeah.
Had you all seen the film before, or...?
No, I hadn't.
No?
Did you guys?
I knew about the scene with the peppermint foot bum.
the most infamous scene in the whole thing. Yeah. So what? Tell me how it came about, then. Was it something that you guys decided that you wanted to put on, or...?
Yeah, so Mike Tweddle, our artistic director, who leads the organisation Tobacco Factory Theatres, it's a play that has quite, that he's got a personal connection to. He performed in it when he was 19 years old above a pub in Birmingham, I think. I think, he joined Tobacco Factory a couple of years ago, and he knew that he wanted to put it on here, and this felt like the right kind of time because it's the 25th anniversary of when the play was first put at the Bush Theatre in London.
And I won't lie, I genuinely, until we started talking off air before we started the show, did not realise it had come from a play in the first place, because I mean the film was so iconic and so big, and especially given the age I was at the time, it was a real kind of, I could probably recite every line to you, it's that kind of bad. But so how close to the film does the stage show stay?
The play, there are a few differences, I think, but there's, to be honest with you, I don't know the play as well as you guys do. So maybe you should just come and watch the play and then you'll know what the differences are.
I totally intend to. So, but I mean, I presume you have all now seen the film. Was that part of like learning what it's about, and or did you just go, no, we're not going to do that, we're going to go totally off the book with the...
I think quite a few of the choir members have watched the film, yeah. Am I right?
Yeah,
I haven't seen yet, yeah. But I will before we...
Yeah, and we've got the script, we've all been studying the script.
Right.
Do you think that could ruin it, though, if you watch the movie, because it could prejudice what you're doing on stage? Maybe you watch the movie after... You've done the play.
That's what I've decided to do.
Okay.
Yeah, and also with the cast that we've got coming in on Mondays who are going to start rehearsing, I want to be able to see them as the first people that are bringing the script to life that I've been reading. Yeah. So that was my choice anyway.
Yeah, no, I think that's quite good because it could have been prejudicial, I think, if you'd watched the movie first.
Yeah.
So depending on who you've got, you might not have had a choice. Half of the gay population have seen that film 20 times at least. Yeah. It's kind of one of those most iconic films, isn't it? Now, you two are in the choir, aren't you?
That's right.
Give us some idea. Is it the same kind of songs? Have they changed them around?
So we're doing a bit of Mama Cass, aren't we?
Yeah.
And I think we'd also make, hopefully we're going to make Andy Bell and Vince Clark proud as well, mm-hmm. With one of the songs we're singing. But I don't know how much we're allowed to give away, Ailey.
Well, it's a tricky one because we've been wanting to keep some of the songs a bit of a surprise rather than give them all away. But yeah, there's Mama Cass.
But we could say they're not necessarily all the ones from the original.
No. So the musical director made his choices about the songs to put in based very much on the script and knowing at like the certain points in the story where he knew that having a song sung live by the choir would really help tell the story and the dramaturgy of that moment and help make make the audience feel a certain way. So it's really different to the way that the music is used in the film.
All right. Mm. And are you just starting rehearsals of the music, or have you been going a little while now?
God, when did we start, Marta?
We started in May, 18th of May, I think.
So are you an established choir?
Absolutely not. No, we sort of we had to audition. That was the first thing that was a bit hairy.
Through
Ailey's leadership, she's been teaching us how to sing and breathe and what have you. So, but it's been great. And
so this basically is your first gig. So this could be a new beginning for a new choir in Bristol. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. We sort of turned up for the singing and I think it's turning into something else.
Yeah, and it was always an ambition of ours at the theatre to start a new choir because we felt like that. I think Mike's decision to put a choir in the show was really about the community are a really important presence in that story, and the way that the community accept Jamie and Stee or the way that they respond is important. And so having a big community presence on stage was what he wanted. And obviously music is a really good way to transport an audience immediately to the early 1990s. So that was where the kind of choir idea came about, and that we thought, yeah, this needs to be a brand new group of people who have never, maybe some of them have never sung before in their lives. Maybe they've just sung in the shower at the top of their voices and that's it. And some people in the choir are established choir goers and have been singing for years and years. So it's a really good mix of like experience levels. And I think that's what's so special about the project is that people overcome fears or, anxieties.
Yeah. No, I'm going to ask you to do one thing because we're chatting away here because we know the story really, really well because I've seen the movie so many times. You guys are rehearsing it. There will be people listening who have not got a clue what we're talking about, apart from the fact it's called Beautiful Thing. Seeing as you've read it from the script, give us a very quick, like 30-second synopsis of what the storyline is and what it's about.
Okay, so Beautiful Thing is set on a council estate in Thamesmead. It follows the story of three teenagers called Jamie, Stee, and Leah. Leah's been expelled from school and she spends most of her time lounging about in the sun listening to Mama Cass. And Jamie and Stee, now which way round is it? One of them is being bullied at home. Jamie is being bullied at school and Stee is having a really difficult time at home, and it's Stee kind of escaping from his home life and trying to find refuge with Jamie. That's where the kind of beautiful thing starts to happen. That's it in a nutshell, I think.
That's a very good start.
It's a really what is it? It's a razor sharp story, but it kind of spirals into a beautiful fairy tale. That's the tagline, an urban fairy tale, and that's what it is. I think it's a real kind of joyous, celebratory story.
It's very a story. Nice. It's a love story.
It's a love story, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, classically, as we do with everyone we interview, we're rapidly running out of time. But tell us, when can we come see it, and where, and the details, that kind of stuff.
It opens on the 11th of October and runs until the 27th of October. I'll hand over to these guys for the rest.
So, is it evenings? Have we got matinees?
So we got some matinees. Yeah, the choir has been divided into two, so we're not doing every single performance. So we're doing
mostly from the 16th onwards, I think. But yeah, the other half of the choir is really good too. So you won't.
Is the choir? Is the choir on stage?
Yeah.
You're not sort of to one side, you're visible.
The idea is that we are the community on the Thamesmead estate.
Right.
So it's all clever. Acting, singing, dancing, the whole lot, you'll see.
Mm-hmm. Are we dancing?
No,
I can only do the Theresa May dance.
Well, we have a surprise for you. Oh, you have an audition coming to dance.
I can audition for dancing on radio.
So it's Tobacco Factory, isn't it?
Here
Factory in Bristol.
Theaters.
So if you're listening, Glastonbury or Froome, etc., it is up here at the Tobacco Factory. Are tickets on sale already?
Tickets are on sale now. Yeah, grab them quick.
They're selling out.
They are. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Where from? Is it direct from the Tobacco Factory?
Yeah, if you go to the Tobacco Factory Theatres website and make sure that you Google Tobacco Factory Theatres, not just the Tobacco Factory, otherwise you might get lost somewhere else. But yeah, you'll find the website there, and you'll find all the tickets.
Cool. Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you guys. As we said off air, we're going to try and see if we can get someone backstage when you're starting your rehearsals and come chat to you with a microphone so that we can get a bit more out there as we get closer towards the show. But it's been lovely chatting to you, and I really hope it goes well, because it is a fantastic story, and I can't wait to see how you do it. It's going to be so different on a stage, I think.
We might spot you in the audience then.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. Yeah, or on stage, because I'm aiming to come down and interview the main...
Yeah, you should definitely come down. That would be brilliant, and maybe hopefully get to see some of the choir in full action as well.
That'd be good. Anyway, we will make sure we put all the details up on our website as well with the podcast, so it's up there. So if you are looking for tickets, just head to shoutoutradio.lgbt and we'll make sure that we put all the info up there. But stay with us, you're listening to Shout Out. We'll be back in a minute.
The Shout Out Podcast.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT Radio for you.
Oh, as they were fabulous. Walking out, they said, oh, we sing this.
Yes.
That's Dream a Little Dream of Me by
the
Mamas and the Papas. It's officially by.
It's Mamma Cass, isn't it?
Yeah. But she was part of the group first, wasn't she? And then she went solo.
She really stuffed on the side, wasn't it? I think.
She joined the group as a last member because they wouldn't allow her. The guy who ran the group, I can't remember his name, said she wasn't good enough. She couldn't get up high enough sing the notes.
Wow.
So she got. Now, when you're watching the movie and they were hitting her in the back of the head with a hairbrush at that party. Well, Mama Cass, it said that she bumped her head on a lead pipe, and the next day she was able to hit those notes and she joined the Mamas and the Papas.
That's wonderful. That's a really nice story.
I didn't know that. So it's kind of an homage to that in
That's the hairbrush moment in the movie.
Yes, no, I remember it very well.
I do know you mentioned it. Yeah.
And then, of course... Yeah, well, we won't give away the plot, but it's a very funny scene. Anyway.
It is.
Yeah. Do you not have a funny feeling you can watch Beautiful Thing at the moment on Netflix?
Wow.
No, I've tried.
And it's available
Netflix,
from DVD.
Or maybe
no,
Amazon
it's
Prime.
Advertised as Netflix, but it's only in the US.
Oh.
It's not in the UK. Channel 4 still got the rights.
The DVD is widely available.
The DVD is for sale.
All good record shops and so on.
I've tried Amazon, Blu-ray? Netflix, and Channel 4 and Film 4, but it's not available on any streaming service legally. You've got to get
don't do it illegally.
No, I'm just saying.
No, I know. He didn't. Don't tempt them.
You can find.
I'm not saying a word. I'm just saying go and buy the DVD.
You can buy it for a tenner. Yes,
yeah,
it's cheap.
Yeah.
So I've got it on VHS. I just haven't got a VHS player anymore.
I've got loads of stuff on VHS. Yeah.
I should have kept my first Betamax.
We had a Betamax.
That'd be worth a fortune. Now.
I had the 880. There's no electronics. It was mechanical keys. Yeah. It was like metal rods connecting
That's
the keys.
Right. Mm. Yeah, remember that. Yeah. End of the 70s.
My first
the
80s. VHS recorder, you put the tape in the top and pushed it down.
Yeah, that's it.
It was like a huge. I think it's still in my attic, actually, somewhere.
Yeah. Really big. I mean, everything was big in those days, wasn't it? There's no miniature electronics then.
So, but I can't. I really want to go see the show.
I want to see
what it's like on the stage versus
catch up with the guys,
With them saying the fact that the chorus are basically the kind of people on the council estate. So they're singing, but they're also kind of part of the action as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess at the end scene in the movie is the people from the council estate standing in a circle around Stee and Jamie.
You just gave away the ending.
Well
everyone knows
seen
the film,
it.
But it might be different.
If you're listening
to
Shout Out, you would have seen it.
It was actually they did use actually people from the Thamesmead Council Estate.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
That's very common thing in TV and film, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for this week. But as always, you can grab the podcast and find out more in the usual place.
That'll be online at shoutoutradio.lgbt, of course, on Facebook and Twitter. Links on the website.
Next week, we're with a TV vet, believe it or not. But for myself, Steph and Terry, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Did you forget my name?
No, we don't. We're dying. Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.